All right, very good. And Mr. Ayani, are you on by audio now? I can't hear you.
Yes, I'm on the audio.
Okay, excellent. All right, so we'll call the case. It's the Carnea Roberson versus STI International. The file number is 820-0020. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral arguments and identify your client. The appellant may proceed at this time.
Thank you. My name is Nixon Ayeni, spelled N-I-X-O-N, and the last name is A-Y-E-N-I. I am appearing on behalf of Mr. Daniel Robinson, who is the appellant in this case. Do you want me to go into my argument?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right, thank you. This case was initially filed in the district court and on a motion for summary judgment. The judge granted the summary judgment. We then appealed that the judge, abused his discretion and also asked that the court, to take a look at the case and make a decision as to if the case should have been dismissed, on a summary judgment. I will not go into the labor of asking that the court look into the fact that this case should be brought in the appellate division, because it is within the purview as we laid out in our brief. However, I will go to the thrust of our argument. Our argument is that this case should not have been dismissed. For one, there are myriad issues that we disagree. And one of those issues that we disagree is as to if there was supposed to be an expert in this case, or not. I think the judge's decision in granting summary judgment, the judge talked about the need for an expert. But this case is unique, and every case has to be based and balanced based on its uniqueness. The fact that this gun was in the hands of STI immediately following the accident, and STI also agreed that they did do some changes to the gun. We feel that even if we should bring an expert, it will be after the fact, because it has changed materially from what it was when it caused the harm.
Mr. Ayeni, do you agree that you, as the plaintiff in the case, as representing the plaintiff, that you have the burden of proof in showing there is a design defect at the time that the gun leaves the manufacturer? Do you understand the question?
Yes, sir.
Is that your burden of proof in bringing this claim? Do you agree with that?
I would say that it is based on the facts surrounding this case. Because for one, this is something that falls within the chain of commerce. And with anything that falls within the chain of commerce, and everybody that is in direct control of that product, when it gets to the consumer hands, is held strictly liable for the defect of that product.
But in this case, what is the design defect? I mean, how would any jury or layperson be able to determine what the defect was in this case?
Because when the gun was fired, the gun did not act the way it should. When the gun is loaded, the bullet is supposed to go outside of the chamber, not jump outside where the recoil is supposed to come from. And it's not supposed to do that. It is not normal. The defect in itself is in its operation, because there was something that was wedging it, and so it made it jump out. We cannot be able to show that because the gun went back to STI, and STI did some work to the gun. They shaved the gun, they shaved the pin, they did a lot of significant changes to the gun from the way it was when it was initially fired.
Mr. Ayeni, yes. Is it your position then that as a matter of law, you don't have to prove what the design defect was? It didn't work and that's enough?
I think that is enough in this case, because there is no way of showing that, because it's gone to STI and STI has changed it from the way it was on that day that it was fired.
Do you have a case you could cite us to where there's been a strict liability claim brought just without any evidence regarding exactly what the design defect or the manufacturing defect was that you could refer us to where that has not been required that you prove that?
Your Honor, because we brought this on the premise of a strict liability, because it was put in the chain of command. We are saying that the product was defective when it was put into the chain of command. That burden now shifts to the manufacturer to show that it was not defective when it got into the customer's hand. It is as if to say that when you buy a can of tuna and you find something that looks like tuna in it, and you tell the manufacturer, okay, this thing has tuna in it and it's not tuna, they have to show that it's tuna.
But that's
when it got to the manufacturer, the manufacturer had the burden of showing that this gun was not defective when it came to death.
So, counsel, if I may, isn't that strict liability analysis different? Whereas here, you know, we have 2 years, I think, where people didn't know where the gun was.
You know, that is not exactly true, because when the gun left STI, it did not get into anybody's hands. The gun went from STI to the person that they sold it to, then to the shop. You know, it was not sold to a private person. So it remained within the chain of command. The chain of command was not broken. The time that my client got hold of the gun was the first time that gun was actually sold to a consumer. So if there was a break in the chain of commerce, I can understand that. But there was no break in the chain of commerce. They can't show that there was no break in the chain of commerce. And that in itself, you know, still holds that manufacturer liable until, you know, they can show that it was the chain of commerce was broken. They can't show that. They are the one that sold the gun. So they know who they sold the gun to. They didn't sell it to an individual. They sold it to a business. And the business finally sold the gun to a customer. So that customer stands at the principal owner of the gun when the gun was transferred to the customer. So the customer don't have to prove what happened within that 2 years unless the gun was sold to an individual before coming back into the chain of command. This is not the case. So in terms of that, the strict liability is still attached. It was never broken. Your Honor, based on that, you know, we have to then look at when the defect actually happened in the first place. And these are factual things that has to be shown. And since the gun got into the hand for the first time, and there was a damage to the buyer, they are still held liable based on that premise. Now, in terms of the expert witness that the court said that we should have done, what I'm saying to the court is because it was not in our control after the incident, it went back to STI. And STI had the gun. STI is in a better position to say that there is nothing wrong with the gun and ship it back. But they did some work to it. If there's nothing wrong with the gun, then why are they doing work to the gun? So these are the facts that leads to what we are saying, that this case is also very fact-laden. It is a question of mixed facts and law. So if there's some factual disagreement, this case should not be dismissed.
But Mr. Yenny, don't you have to show that the defect in the gun was the proximate cause of the injury? And in this case, the gun didn't come with bullets, right? I mean, they had to be bought separately, right?
Yes.
And the gun had to be loaded with those bullets, right? I mean, how do we know in this case what evidence is there in this case that the accident occurred as a result of the defect and not because of some inappropriate bullet or inappropriate usage or inappropriate loading of the gun? I mean, what is there in this record that would indicate that there's this proximate cause between the defect and the actual injury?
To the beginning, when the gun was purchased, the first time that the gun was fired, there was this injury. This gun went back to STI. STI did some work to the gun. If it was the bullet, then they could have loaded bullets in the gun and shipped it back and said there's nothing wrong with it. But it didn't work to the gun. That fact that it did work to the gun shows that the gun itself was not operating properly. They can say that is their normal way of doing business, but it does not make any sense. If there is something wrong, you fix it. If there's nothing wrong, you don't fix it. You send it back. So
now, is the only evidence with regard to what I think the respondent calls the maintenance of the gun, is your late submissions. Is that the only evidence with regard to that factual issue?
Yes, Your Honor, because there is nothing we can really do because they have changed it from the date of that accident. That is our cross, because it goes to spoilage. It goes to the fact that it has materially been changed. So when something has been materially changed, it is not the same when it left the place to go back. Now, Your Honor, I have to put in context the fact that my client never left the building where he bought the gun. He bought it there, and the bullets that he bought was there. And because the bullet was actually given to him as part of the sale, and he went to the back of the building where they have the shooting range, those fired the gun. That is where the accident happened. It wasn't that he went outside, bought a gun, bought bullets, or came or shot the gun outside. It was all in the same building. So when we looked at it, you know, because you know, what I'm asking this court to do is to balance it and look at the facts that, you know, what circumstances we are given and what we are able to prove. The only thing we can prove is that the gun didn't act properly, the gun went back, and they did change the gun materially. Those are the three prongs that we are able to prove. Because if we are to make a suggestion that the gun was good, then you know they shouldn't have even fixed it in the first place.
I don't know if you can see, but your time ended a moment or two ago. So you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And the respondent may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is William Davidson. I represent the respondent, STI International, the manufacturer of the subject gun here, the pistol involved. We believe Judge Millenacher correctly granted summary judgment to STI, and we would ask that this court affirm. As the court, I'm sure, is aware, there were originally two defendants in this matter, Bill's Gun Shop, where Mr. Roberson purchased the pistol and apparently also purchased ammunition, and where the incident happened. They apparently settled the day of the hearing before Judge Millenacher when the summary judgment motion was heard and then shortly thereafter granted. We believe that this court should affirm because Judge Millenacher correctly determined that there are no issues of material fact in this matter for a jury to consider, and that she did not err in her application of the law. The record is relatively bare, and that is due, I suspect, primarily because appellant undertook no depositions, served no written discovery that I believe is part of the record. What is part of the record is the appellant's answers to interrogatories, which I believe themselves are relatively bare bone. And essentially the record in this case is the allegations in the complaint and the averments made in the complaint. And with respect, while part of the appellant's arguments in their brief appear to be directed towards a Rule 12 standard, this is not a Rule 12 case. This was a case that was filed. We had approximately 10 months or so to do discovery. There was an amended scheduling order extending the time for discovery, extending the time for expert disclosures, due in part, I think, due to some late service of the complaint on Bill's Gun Shop. But regardless, there were been no arguments made that the summary judgment motion was premature. There was opportunity for discovery. The record was available. And candidly, there are no facts, and Judge Millenacher correctly determined that, that would establish what the design defect is for a jury to consider. In fact, at the hearing itself, I believe it's transcript page 28, Judge Millenacher, and I'm paraphrasing, specifically posed the question, what evidence in the record is there to show that there was a defect and what the defect was? And the answer is, the evidence is the injury to my client and the way the gun exploded. Basically, the plaintiff is relying on the allegations in the complaint and his injuries. The gun exploded. That, we contend, is not enough. That is mere averment. We do not know if there was a problem with, at the time that the gun left STI's facility, when it was manufactured and shipped back in May of 2016, some 17, 18 months before the incident. We do not know what occurred in those 17 to 18 months. The gun, what we do know in the record, was shipped and sold to Lefty's Shooting and Outdoor Sporting Goods in Robbinsdale, but the gun was purchased in January of 2018 in Circle Pines at Bill's Gun Shop, where the incident happened. We don't know what occurred in between. We have no idea what ammunition was loaded into the gun or into the pistol. We don't know if it was properly loaded. The record is bare, and we would contend that the burden of proof is on the plaintiff, notwithstanding the arguments that the burden of proof in a strict liability case somehow magically flips or shifts to the defendant. We don't believe that's the law in Minnesota. We've seen no authority to suggest that. To the extent there is some burden of proof on STI to show what happened, we believe the affidavit from Josh Dow, the chief operating officer, satisfies any burden, any prima facie requirement that we establish what the condition of the product, in this case the gun, was when it left our hands back in May of 2016. To the extent there might be any burden shifting, it would shift back to the plaintiff, and nothing has been brought forward to suggest that there was a design defect when it left our facility, that there was a design defect when the gun itself was used in 2018. The arguments that, well, it would be fruitless to hire an expert after the fact because apparently when the gun incident occurred, Mr. Roberson didn't want to keep the gun. He tried to return it. There was some dispute with Bill's Gun Shop. I have no idea what happened, but it appears Bill's Gun Shop sent the pistol back to STI. The record submissions as to that are quite threadbare, and the trial court actually did not consider the late submissions, the exhibit affidavits that were submitted some 2 days before the hearing. And we contend that the trial court exercised her discretion in declining to consider that those materials, those late submitted materials. There's been no argument and certainly no showing that Judge Millenacher abused her discretion in refusing to consider those materials.
Now, it appears to me that the plaintiff is basically making a res ipsa claim. Was that ever made as a claim in the complaint?
It was not.
Raised?
Res ipsa was not pled in the complaint, and Judge Millenacher noted that. And to the extent res ipsa, and there are certainly elements or themes of res ipsa throughout this appeal, that I bought a gun. Everybody knows a gun shouldn't do this. You shouldn't get hurt. I would respectfully contend that is not the case. Res ipsa, even if it was pled and even if it applies, requires, among other things, that the incident-causing instrumentality, the tool, the gun here, be in my client's exclusive control. And the undisputed facts are it is not. It left our hands in May of 2016. There's been no evidence presented as to what happened between then and the January 2018 incident. Certainly no evidence as to the type of ammunition and the like. And I would say res ipsa is not applicable here, is also shown because Bill's gun shop was sued and allegations were brought against it. So the fact that we don't know whether there was improper loading, whether there was some defect in the ammunition, whether, as is more than likely, what happened is the gun fired properly and the casing, when it was ejected, may have somehow come upon Mr. Roberson's arm and burned him. Casings do eject. That is a normal operation of a gun. And I don't want to get too far afield because this is a case bare of any expert testimony. And while the court, through its dealings and its experience, particularly perhaps in criminal matters, perhaps knows a little bit more about handguns or sees them in matters more than the lay public perhaps might, I don't believe that this is a case where the operation of a gun, certainly not the manufacture or design of a gun, is something within the common knowledge. And that is why we contend expert testimony is required. Judge Millenacher agreed. As to that legal conclusion, which is de novo to this court, we do not believe there's been a showing, or certainly not persuasive argument, that experts would not be needed in a design defect case of this type. Appellant, in his brief, also attempts to contend, and it was pled in the complaint, that this was some sort of ultra-hazardous activity, abnormally dangerous situation. And Judge Millenacher correctly rejected that. I just want to touch upon that briefly. One, The focus of any abnormal, dangerous condition, ultra-hazardous activity, at least as it concerns my client, would be on the manufacture and design and the sale, the shipment of the product, not the actual end use of the product. We were not responsible for the end use of the product. But perhaps more importantly, I don't believe Minnesota has ever adopted the abnormally dangerous, ultra-hazardous activity in this context. And with respect, as an error correcting court, we do not believe that the Court of Appeals should be creating a new cause of action in Minnesota. Such a creation of a new cause of action would be properly either for the legislature or for the Supreme Court. And while the Supreme Court has occasionally addressed the ultra-hazardous activity, restatement second of torts, it has been in certainly completely different factual contexts. And when it has, it has been in a very narrow sense. It has never expanded things to a case like this. And the fact that STI is a licensed federal manufacturer of firearms, and that firearms are a product of our society, they are constitutionally protected, they are a licensed legal product, albeit with some regulations and restrictions, does not convert a firearm into an abnormally dangerous or ultra-hazardous tool or product. With that, we believe that Judge Millenacher properly applied the law. We don't think there's been really any argument that she misapplied the law. There's been suggestions or argument that the burden of proof is somehow different, or that there are somehow disputed issues of fact. We don't believe that the factual record suggests that there's a material issue for a jury to conclude beyond speculation, and that's what a jury would be asked to do in this case, to allow a case to go forward. So we believe summary judgment was properly granted. Absent any questions that I might be able to answer for the court, I'll yield the rest of my time, and we would just respectfully ask that this court affirm, whether in an unpublished opinion or published. Obviously, that's for the panel's determination, but I would suggest this case would be appropriately resolved in an unpublished opinion or decision. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for weighing in on the publication issue. We appreciate that. Any questions from the panel? All right, very good. Thank you. Mr. Ayeni, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And we're not hearing you. Mr. Ayeni, we're still not hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Now I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, first of all, I would like to talk more about the expert, because I think that is the crux of STI's argument, that this case should have been won, that an expert will have to be able to talk about. When the gun was brought back, there was an expert that actually looked at it. They didn't make any decision. STI was present, and I was present, but that was not part of the decision, because that was brought by the gun seller itself. But that was after the gun had gone to STI and was brought back. So the issue now becomes, what is an expert going to be able to reveal? The expert is going to be looking at the gun from the time that STI sent it back, and they have done some work to it. So if an expert is looking at the gun and saying, well, this gun is not defective, they have already seen the defect. So that argument runs circular. What we are saying is that in this case, this gun was in the hands of people that sell guns, and there is no sale of this gun to anybody else. as a matter of fact, because SCS attorney just said something which is important. The guns are federally mandated to see if the gun was sold. This gun was never sold. The only person that this gun was sold to was to my client. For FDI to say that liability cuts off because of the time does not matter. If the gun is sitting on the shelf for 20 years, when the consumer gets hold of that gun, that is at the point where the consumer interest becomes attached. So we are looking at it from the point of where my client's interest became attached and my client's health became attached by this gun is when he purchased it. And he gave the gun right back after he got injured. And, you know, the gun never left the premises of Bill's gun shop. Bill's gun shop did what he was supposed to do. They sent it back to the manufacturer, saying that the gun is defective, and they fixed it when it got to them. They're not arguing that they didn't fix it. As a matter of fact, the exhibit that FBI attorney is talking about was one that we got from them from discovery, and also from receipts that we got from the Bill Gunshot. It was their own receipts stating what they did to the gun. So for them to say that that is not important in this case is ridiculous. Your Honor, guns are checked by the federal government because they know what the guns can do. Guns are meant to kill. It's not a toy. So it is a very dangerous activity. Now, in terms of the res ipsa loquitur, there is no way that we can say that it was completely under their hands when the injury happened. Because my client had the gun and he was testing the gun when the injury happened. So that part of the res ipsa loquitur is the point that we cannot prove. Because it has to continually be in the hands of the defendant when the final damage gets done. So that is one of the reasons why the res ipsa loquitur in this case is going to be a hard burden to meet because of that last point. Everything else is there. I see my time has run out. So I will ask that the court send it back down so that the court should properly put it on trial, let the trial of fact hear this case. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, counsel. We will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision within the statutory period of time. Thank you again for your presentations this morning.
Thank you, y'all.